Is that good? I genuinely can't tell if that's good.
G'day, how are ya? It's Aiden Jones. Oh, yes. Yes, man. You're listening to Sitting Under a Tree for Tuesday, the 19th of March, 2024. I've just had a wonderful evening. I'm a little bit tired. It's Monday night. I had my piano lesson today. I had a full day at work, working at my removals job, and got home, played a bit of piano, ate some food, and then went to my piano lesson. It was great. I feel like I've been doing some good work lately. My Bach piece, the A minor, is slowly getting there. It's all kind of under my fingers now. I've just got to keep playing it and working on it and making sure the articulation is nice, that the short notes are, you know, I play them the same way throughout the piece, and I let the two hands talk to each other and come out at the moments when they each come out. And then this piece, Liebestraum by Franz Liszt, my teacher said next week I'm going to play it for him all the way through, or next lesson in a couple of weeks. And we've been working on that and a few little bits in it and the kind of the harmonies. And he said he might do like an analysis of the piece for me so that he can wrap his head around what's going on harmonically. And that would be very helpful for me to understand what's going on. So that's really nice. I'm learning a new piece by Chopin, the Nocturne in A-flat major, Opus 32, number 2. And I'm just loving it. Oh, it's so beautiful. There's a little bit of harmony. It goes from, what does it do? F minor, this chord progression, C7, F minor, and then what's that? Like a... G? No, G half to... Fuck! I don't know. Who cares? Yeah, I'm clearly tired. What the fuck am I talking about? Why am I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about, man. Having a nice time playing piano, all right? Jesus Christ. What an absolutely horrific start to the podcast this week. Here we go. We're off. We are off. How are you guys? Are you good? Fucking hell. Yeah, I'm a bit tired, but it's just been nice. After my piano lesson, I went and sat. Oh my God, I went to this restaurant. What was it called? This lovely Italian place on Lygon Street. I can't even find it because I didn't even search it. Like, I was searching for a restaurant, I couldn't really find anything. It's just the name of three blokes. But you can't go, you know. What's a restaurant with it that is named the name of three blokes? Johnny, Vince, and Sam's Ristorante. There we go. And I'm in there, I get in, I sit down, I'm like, you know what, I want to treat myself to a nice meal. You know, I had a meal at Marion on Gertrude Street in Fitzroy, and it might have even been pre-pandemic. It was like at least 2 years ago. It might be 4 years ago. I can't remember. But it was a Saturday night. I did a trial show of whatever the show I was working on at the time. And then I was done by like 7 and I just walked. I did the trial at Voltaire, I remember. And then I just went for a long walk and wandered over to Gertrude Street and found my way to Marion, this restaurant that I'd kind of walked past a million times and never gone into. And I went in, I got a table in front of the chef. And I still remember I had a burrata with chili and honey. I had a nice salad. I think I got maybe this, like the rump steak for a main and like some potatoes and a non, like one of, you know, that kind of wine shit. And it must have been about $100. And it was just the most wonderful I reckon I would have been there for like 2 hours. I flipped my phone upside down and I just read my book and had this wonderful food. And I think about that meal all the time. And tonight wasn't that nice. Tonight wasn't as good as that. It just is something else when you drop $100-$150 on yourself, isn't it? On a nice meal. What a special moment. But tonight was really lovely. I've written, I think, the beginnings of a new story for the show. Did I tell you guys the thing about Chopin dedicating? I don't think I have. Chopin dedicated the piece that I'm playing to this lady, Marie Pleyel, right, who was a pianist as well, one of his contemporaries. And I'm looking at the melody. Ooh, I just tried to prop myself up on my chair and I fell off. I'm looking at the melody of the first section and how it goes up, bum, bum. And then at the end of each phrase, it goes down, bum, bum. It's almost like hopeful. And then like a hope, and then the non-fulfillment of that hope. Dun, 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 dun. It's like it's up, but then it's down. Something kind of quietly dramatic about that. And I've been thinking about who he dedicated it to, right? He dedicated it to this lady, Marie Pleyel, who was a pianist. Very good pianist and one of his contemporaries. And she was engaged to this other composer, Hector Berlioz, when she was 18 and he was 26. And he was a bit of a loser. He didn't have enough money. You know, like he had no money. He was 26. And she had more money than him. And her mom was like, oh, this guy's a fucking bit of a waste, you know. What are you doing? But Berlioz loved her. So he was like, all right, I'm going to work really hard and prove that I'm, you know, worthy of this girl. So he did work hard and he won this prize called the Prix de Rome in Paris, where it's a prize for artists, I think. Music, yeah, you won in the music category. And the prize is that you get to go to Rome for 2 years and study. And it's like a scholarship thing. And so he wins that. And that's a big deal. And he goes to Rome and she's like, you know, great, babe, well done, you're amazing. He goes to Rome. He's been in Rome like 2 months after he gets to Rome. She just straight up marries another man. It's crazy stuff. And the man she marries, Camille Pleyel, she's Marie. She was Marie Mocker. Marie Pleyel ni Mocker, M-O-K-E, whatever. So she's Marie Pleyel. She marries this guy, Pleyel, who is a piano manufacturer and owns a theater in Paris, and ends up later in life being a business partner of Chopin because he supplies Chopin with his pianos. But even at this point in like 1931, 32, Chopin had performed at his theaters. That was the first theater that he performed at when he came to Paris. This Pleyel guy's a big deal. So Marie Pleyel, you know, Berlioz goes to Italy and she's like, well done, babe. And then she just fucking just marries this guy who's 43. And she at this point is, I think she's 20. And Berlioz is like 28 now. So, is he 28? Whatever the fucking timeline is. And so as soon as he hears, right, that's what happens. As soon as he hears in Rome that his chick has married this other man twice her age, he flips out and he's like straight up. He said in his biography, his words were, in 2 minutes I was decided. He goes, I'm going to kill her. I'm going to kill the mum. I'm going to kill the husband. And then I'm going to kill myself. He just freaks out and he's like, I'm going to fucking kill everyone. And then he gets two guns and loads them because it's like 1830. It's like slow to load these. So he like loads his pistols and then he gets, this is my favorite bit. He goes and buys a fucking outfit, like a costume to wear to disguise himself, a maid's outfit, right? So he a dress. So he's like, I'm going to kill everyone. First things first, I'm buying a dress. So he's got his loaded guns and a dress. And then he's like, all right, I got to go to Paris. But this is before, when I was in the restaurant, I was doing a bit of research for this bit and checking the timelines. And this is pre-trains. There's no train lines. There's no rail transport. This is the first train to open in France was 1836. Italy, I don't know when it was, but it also didn't have any trains at the time. So there's no trains. So this guy's not going from Rome to Paris via train. He's going in, literally is in a horse and cart. And I did a bit of research and on the speeds and everything, because he didn't make it to Paris. He got to Nice, which is about 800 Ks away, which is about 440 miles. And the horse and carts traveled at 8 miles an hour, maximum speed. So minimum, he's in a horse and cart for 55 hours. And, you know, with brakes and everything, and it's probably not going 8 miles an hour, it's probably going slower. You're looking at like he's in this, he's traveling to get to Nice for about 5 days. Nice is halfway between Rome and Paris, pretty much. So he's 5 days a week-ish, right? And I just imagine him slowly cooling off after the freak out, you know? Like day one, he's just in the horse and cart. He's in the fucking cart just by himself with his with all of his bits. And he's like imagining, you know, like how you are when you, you know, you find out your fiancé. They were engaged. You find out your fiancé. And you're in your mid-20s, you're in your 20s, and you find out the girl you're in love with, she's left you and she's married a guy who's 43. You're freaking out. He's like imagining, you know, they're fucking and they're just like laughing at him. Like, Emilia's just such a loser. She's like, wah, wah, wah. Your dick's so much bigger than his. Wah, wah. And he's just in this fucking cart by himself, just like punching the wall. Fuck! Fuck! Crying. Just every now and then he gets like really stressed out and he just jerks off. He's just full of emotions. He's got nothing, you know. But by day 3, 4, he's getting pretty tired and he's starting to come back to his senses and he's just in this cart with his two loaded guns and a dress, just looking at the dress going like, Hector, Hector, what? Oh, we are going to laugh about this, aren't we? Oh man. And then he gets to Nice and he's just like, no, come on mate, all right, you've had your fun. Says sorry to the guy driving the buggy, sorry for all the fucking cum all over the walls, I think I was having a moment. And just, you know, turns it around and goes back to Rome, because that's what he did. He went back to Rome. So, yeah, this girl, that's who Chopin dedicated the piece to. And her marriage to that 43-year-old guy only lasted for like 5 years because she kept cheating on him. Which I think is so funny. He broke off the marriage citing her, quote, repeated infidelities, which is like, mate, you're marrying, how are you going to be 43 and marrying a 20-year-old chick and you're like, the 20-year-old girl I married is an idiot. Yeah, man. She's fucking 20. Oh, I think that's really funny. That he is surprised that she's like 20 and just, you know, yeah, she probably doesn't want to be married to you, man. If anything, I mean, I don't know how he was with it. He actually seems very reasonable. I don't think there were any hard feelings or what, but he definitely broke off the marriage because of her repeated infidelities. And I mean, good on him. He got to be married, you know, to a girl in her 20s for a bit. I'm sure the sex was lovely. I'm sure after about 6 months, the novelty of that would have really worn off. Imagine that, being 43, married to a 20. What a nightmare. That's like that scene in The Simpsons when Homer goes to hell and it's like, you like donuts, eh? Then have all the donuts in the world, you know? It's like, oh, you want to be with a 20-year-old girl, huh? Well, now you're married to one. Suck shit. Twenty-year-old anyone is stupid, you know? But a girl, all right. sorry. So one of the infidelities, and I think it might have been one, the last one, the one that really did it for the marriage, was with Franz Liszt, who was the other, like, Chopin and Liszt were the two great composers of their time, or great pianists anyway, of their time. She slept with, and Chopin was kind of like the, the art, like the one that the establishment loved. And then Liszt was the one that was like selling all the tickets, filling the huge theaters, no stadiums at the time, but like, you know, yeah, filling the huge venues. People loved him. And he was a rock star basically. And when they hooked up, they did it in Chopin's apartment in Paris that Liszt was staying in while Chopin was out of town. And they ended up falling out over that. Chopin and Liszt were friends, and that was apparently one of, if not the thing, that led to them falling out, which is kind of sad, you know, that that happens to friends. It's a very Liszt move, from what I know of Franz Liszt. This is a very Liszt move, to stay at your mate's house. And then, I mean, it's pretty dumb. He was staying at his mate's house and he brought a girl back, but not just any girl. The mate whose house he was staying at, that guy's friend's wife and friend and business partner, the wife of that guy's friend and business partner. That's the best way to say it. He's staying at his mate's house, and then in the house, He fucked the wife of that guy's friend and business partner. Whatever, you get it. But Chopin was angry at Liszt. But he, weirdly, there's nothing about him being angry at Marie. There's no like falling out between him and Marie Pleyel, who was also a pianist. He's just getting angry at Liszt. And I was laughing when I was at dinner, laughing at the idea of like Chopin yelling at Liszt, you know, going like, you fucking idiot, I fucking let you stay in my house and you fuck my friend's wife in my house. And also he owns the theater. How dumb are you? And Liszt is like, oh, you're just mad because you never got to fuck her, even though you dedicated your nocturnes to her, you pussy. And Marie's just like standing in the doorway like, oh, you boys, I'll leave you to it. just like gets the... and somehow manages to avoid the whole thing. How fucking fun are these stories, man? This is what's going in the show. And the way I want to tie that into the music is I want to talk about the hope and then the, you know, the up and then the down. At the each bar of the 4-bar phrase has, the first three have an up and then a down, and then the fourth bar ends on a rising note. So it's like hope, failure, hope, failure, hope, failure, and then a little bit of a silver lining at the end, you know? It's just like a constant, it's like a, there's hope, but then there's like small, it's not like a drastic failure. It's just like these small little like, oh. And I kind of imagine it as being like, you know, maybe I'm in love with Berlioz. Oh no, he's crazy. Maybe I'm in love with Pleyel. Oh no, he's old. Maybe I'm in love with List. No, he's got a weird dick. Well, at least no one's yelling at me. I'm not sure about that yet, but that I think I'm going to save those things over me playing the melody, and I reckon that could be fun. So, yeah. Nice dinner, man. I've had a great week. I've had heaps of stuff going on. What can I tell you? Oh, my God, the Spanish tour. Fuck. Dude, what the fuck? The Spanish tour. That was what I was talking about last week. Do you want to know how it went? First of all, not Spanish. I get there. I'm like, hola, ¿qué tal? Me llamo Aidan. They're like, hey, we're Portuguese. I'm like, you're fucking kidding me. I study for a week for the wrong tour, and then I study for another week for the right tour, and I get there and they're fucking Portuguese people. But they know we're speaking Spanish. But I wasn't told. I mean, that's just, you know, hilarious. And then I'm making this tour of the CBD up that I've never done. Stressing out, trying to fucking, you know, say the things, whatever. We get to the first place where we're going to have a bit of morning tea, and they're shut. Great. This is the itinerary that someone else has given me. Yeah. The place where we're going to go, shut. And so I'm like, all right, well, we drive around for a bit more. We go to go into a church, and they are closed. You can't go in because there's a funeral. Great. Even better. But I'm still doing okay. I'm saying the stuff, you know. I've got my notes there that I wrote. Thank God I needed the notes so badly. I'm so glad and proud of myself for preparing in a good way for each of the stops and writing a little, like, 3-4 sentences about each stop. Because if I didn't have that, I would have been absolutely fucked. So that was good. And then we go to the one stop that was really good was we went to the MCG. They'd never seen Australian football before. So I was talking to them about that, about the teams, about the stadium. We walked down to the stadium. They got to go into the AFL shop. A few of them bought a couple little bits. That was nice. And then we go to lunch. Now they've got, there's 17 of them. They've got a booking for lunch. I can't find anywhere to park the bus. So I park in a taxi zone and put the hazard lights on, get out with them and go to the restaurant on the river. We get to the restaurant. Great. Their table's there. I leave. I go to park the bus in a place that's not illegal. I come back 10 minutes later. They're like, oi, what's going on? I'm like, I've given the menus in Spanish, which I went to the trouble of translating, which I was very proud of myself for doing. And they're like, is this meal paid for? And I'm like, I believe so. And they're like, we don't, they're saying it's not. And I'm like, ugh. So I call my boss. I'm not hearing anything from the person who booked it, whatever. We've been there 15, 20 minutes. I'm like, you know what? I don't know what the deal is. I'm really sorry. And they're like, that's okay. We're just going to walk around South Bank for an hour. We're happy to do that. And then we will meet you back here, and then let's go back to that church because the funeral will be done and we want to go inside. I'm like, great. And then as they leave, I find out that I was given a card by my boss that I was supposed to pay for lunch on. I knew about the card, but I didn't know what I was supposed to pay for it. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, they've given me a card, but I don't know what I'm paying for. And the person that I was supposed to talk to wasn't there, and it was just so stressful and it was really hard. It ended up being fine. On the way out of the bus, they all shook my hand. They said, thank you. It was very nice. I was happy. I think they were happy, you know, all good. But, man, it was three things that I'd never done before. I'd never done that type of tour where you have a card to pay for stuff and it's like a whole thing where you're like the boss of their group. One. Two, I've never done a tour of the CBD before, so these are all stories that I don't know. And three, I've never done a tour in Spanish before. So it was just so hard and stressful. And you know what? I feel like I talk about money a lot, but last week with the public holiday and then that, I made at my tour's job about $1,200, and then there's another couple tours from the week before, I think, that I'm going to get paid for on Thursday of this week. So I'm looking at like a $2,000 paycheck for that, $2,100 for Perth because I was in Perth at the weekend doing stand-up. Plus, I'm also waiting on about $1,400 from the gigs in the Gold Coast. So in the next week or so, I'm going to be getting about $5,500 from various things. And that is nice because I've been robbing Peter to pay Paul the last few weeks. The cash flow has not been right. I've been keeping track of it and I'm still putting in $250 into the loan every week. But then I've taken some stuff out to pay for Edinburgh and flights and various things, about $3,000 worth. And I just am really keen to put that money back in because I don't want to be borrowing from the loan. So yeah, fuck money, dude. Fuck money. Actually, fuck it so hard. Went out on Saturday night in Perth and man, Andrew Wolf, Wolfie the King, if you haven't listened, RIP to the Mug Off podcast, first of all, that just wrapped up last week. One of the great Australian comedy podcasts. And the guys have decided to wrap it up, which is very sad, especially for one member that I hear didn't want to have it wrapped up and lose the Patreon money. That sucks. That actually sucks. But those guys had a great run. Congratulations, boys. You know, such a funny podcast. And one of the great episodes of that podcast was the Andrew Wolf, the first one. I can't remember what number it is. It feels like it might have been like the first 20 or 30. And if you haven't listened to it, look up the Mug Off podcast, Wolfie, W-O-L-F-E-Y. And just listen to the motherfucker talk about his life for an hour. It's one of the funniest. I must have listened to it five times. Oh my God. It's one of the funniest hours of podcasting I've ever heard in my life. You will howl with laughter. And anyway, I was in Perth doing comedy this weekend and great lineup on the show, good bunch of mates, sick green room, and the highlight, one of the highlights, everyone's a highlight, but man, having Wolfie in the fucking green room and just, just the guy fucking kills me. We went out on Friday night, first of all, just for a drink or two, and he's walking up to people on the street. He's just with this manic energy and he's lost his voice. He's always lost his voice. And he's going up to people just going, "Oi, you guys should have kids. You guys have to have kids. You guys are hot." Just going up to groups of strangers and telling them that they should have kids. And then we get to the bar and, some, you know, friends, like not comedians, they're there. They've just seen the show. They loved it, but they are not prepared to meet Andrew Wolf in person. They're going like, "Mate, we loved your comedy." And he's just like, "You guys should have kids." He's just hitting them straight away. And it's two couples. And one of the couples, they're like an established, like a 2 or 3 year couple. The other one, they're like a week in and he's not letting up. And then they try and turn it back on him to be like, "Fuck, this is kind of making us uncomfortable. Let's try and flip it on this guy." So they're, and I can see in their eyes, they're like kind of getting serious about it because they're just not ready for Wolfie. He's crazy. And they're going like, "Do you have kids?" And he's like, "Yeah, it's fun." And they're like, "What are your kids' names?" He's like, "I don't know. It doesn't matter." And he goes, they go, "Do you like your kids?" Which it's like, man, you've met this guy. You know he's just going to say something crazy. They're like, "Do you like your kids?" He's like, "Who cares?" He's just going, "Who cares? Who cares? How old are they? I don't know." And he's just getting so drunk and fucking loud. Oh, he's the best, man. And I was egging him on, man. Every time he went like pipe down, I was just like, "Oi, Wolfie, what about these guys? Should they have kids?" Fuck, I loved it. So anyway, then on Saturday night, we do the shows and whatever. me and my boy Kyle Legacy had smoked a bit of weed on Friday night when we got home and watched, you know, that legendary set by Bernie Mac at Live at the Apollo when everyone was bombing and dying and he comes on dressed crazy. He's wearing pants with his own face on the pants. It's nuts. And he comes out and he's like, I ain't scared of you, motherfucker. And he tells these and say, the best one, he tells a bunch of jokes and then at the end of every punchline, at the end of every joke, he goes, kick it to the DJ and the DJ plays music and he dances. And then the DJ stops and then he goes, you don't understand. I ain't scared of you, motherfuckers. And the best one is a girl come up to him and say, girl come up to me and she say, just pussy tastes like pumpkin pie. I said, I made me mad as hell. I said, girl, you know I ain't never had no damn pumpkin pie. Kick it! I want to put the link. I want to put the link in the fucking show notes for this. If you haven't seen that set, it's legendary. You have to watch it. You have to watch it. You. I'm talking to you. You know who you fucking are. That's who I'm talking to, man. I'm talking to you. This episode of the podcast is called Pumpkin Pie. Yeah. You know I even had no damn, you know I never had no damn pumpkin pie. And the picture of the podcast this week, which I think I'm done with Google Deep Dream, man. I'm off it. Yeah, man. This is a new era in the podcast. It's more real. I'm not filtering it, man. The picture for this podcast was so Saturday is Saturday night, right? We do the shows. Oh yeah, so we watched that on Friday night, and then there's like a 5 p.m. show where you just go up and everyone does 5 minutes, and it's just a bit of a fuck around. So I went on, and Legacy goes, "Oi, I dare you to go on, and you have to dance up to the stage the way he does in the video, and then start by saying, 'I ain't scared of you, motherfuckers,'" and I did it. It's on my Instagram if you haven't seen it. It's a reel. I did it and then I did a joke and Legacy, the fucking idiot, stopped recording in the middle of my joke but then started recording again for some reason. So you miss like the middle. It's like a 3-line joke and you miss the middle line, but you do get me delivering the punchline, getting the laugh and then going, kick it. But we didn't prep the DJ at all for what, you know, like we didn't tell him, the sound guy, that we were doing anything. So nothing happened. I just went, kick it. And then just nothing happened. That's awesome. I was actually so happy with that set. Later on in the set, I did another joke, punchline, and I just called. I was like, kick it again. Fuck, I was having so much fun. So, yeah, the second show on Saturday night was also great. The third show, the audience were a bit whack. I don't know. They were just kind of tough and only had 15 minutes. I didn't even know what I was doing. You know what? Like, I just want to do my piano shit, I realized. And I was going there without the piano and doing, you know, bits that I like. And I was having fun, but I was doing other stuff to try and make myself have fun. And I realized what I actually wanted to be doing was to be doing the piano stuff and really testing that out. So I knew I wasn't going to do it. You know, it's still not 100% yet. And the lounge is a club that you kind of have to bring it because the owner is very particular about, you know, the comics that he has on. And I mean, fair enough, it's his club, right? But basically, it's not a club to fuck around at. So I didn't want to come with the piano stuff that I think when I took it to the store, it probably wasn't ready. I think, honestly, it probably is ready now. But I just want to be sure. So next time I do the Perth Comedy Lounge, I will come with the piano. But for this time, just doing straight stand-up, which at the moment now feels like not as exciting. It's not that it's straight stand-up. It's just not the thing that I'm working on at the moment, you know? Anyway, then after the Saturday night shows, we go out and there's a bunch of us and we go to World Bar, Universal Bar. And we're upstairs and we're dancing and Wolfie's there again and Wolfie's fucking, he's on one, man. He was as soon as we got there, This is crazy. This is so out of hand. It was, as soon as we get there, Universal Bar in Perth is this bar that they have like a covers band play on Saturday night. I think they do sets at like 10 and midnight or something like that. I don't know. But so we get there and there's a covers band playing, and the upstairs room doesn't open till 11 and it's like 10:30. So we're hanging out there for a bit. Downstairs, and there's just a whole mix of different people. Like, there's young people, there's like pretty old people, there's middle, there's all different ages, right? And it's a place where people will just fucking hook up. And as soon as we get there, there's this big black guy hooking up with this white lady, and they're both, they must be like 40, maybe, you know, in their 40s, and they are just sucking face. And we get there and Wolfie's just fucking eyes all wide and sweating and drunk, whips out his phone and just starts filming them. And the bouncer is just like, "Oi, what the fuck are you doing, man? Stop fucking filming people." And he's just laughing. The bouncer tells him off. And then he's going around showing everyone the video that he made of just these two people that we don't know just making out. Super, I mean, you totally can't do that. But anyway, I don't know. I guess they're making out in a public place. Whatever, it's still cooked. And then the upstairs bar opens up and he's just like getting more drunk. And I can see the bouncers have their eyes on him. At one point I filmed him and then I showed him the film because behind him was the same couple still making out. And I showed him to be like, "Hey, there's you, but also check out behind you." He fucking lost his shit. That was awesome. And then, and then, I mean, nothing happened. He didn't even do anything bad, but I think they just decided he was too drunk and they kicked him out. But I just got this, this is going to be the image of the podcast this week. I got this fucking incredible photo of him. The bouncers come up and they're all surrounding him, right? And he's got a beer and they're like, "Hey, man, you're done." And he's like, "Oh, nah." And they're like, "Nah, you're fully done." And so they're leading him out. And I got a photo of him reaching his hand out to like grab a hand or like high five one of our mates as the bouncer behind him is just kind of shoveling him out of the venue. And the look on his face is just like so beautiful and innocent, and you can tell how fucked up he is, and it's just, it's perfect. The guy is a hero. I just want to say that right now. Andrew Wolf is he is the purest form of man. I don't know, you'll see it in the photo. So that's what the podcast is this week. Pumpkin pie. The photo's Andrew Wolf. Do I have anything else to say? I got some Bagelows merch. Went to Bagelows again. Big up Dan Muggleton. I think that's it, man. A lovely day. I got the day off tomorrow. It's too hot in Melbourne. It's fucking 31 tomorrow. Bullshit. But after that, we're back down to normal temperatures. I think the next day's 17. Mwah, mwah, mwah. Beautiful, man. So looking forward to that. Thank you guys for listening. Let me finish my tea here. Why not? Finish the tea for the end of the podcast, you know? Celebrate. Fucking knock a few back, cunt. Thank you for listening. This has been Aidan Jones. And I'm going to put a bit of music. No, I'm not. Nah, this has been Aidan Jones sitting under a tree. Bye-bye.